Did you know that Byers Airport Subaru is the oldest Subaru retailer in the entire country? And we're conveniently located right by the airport. Start your journey today at columbussubaru.com. Byers Auto, driving the next generation of buyers.
Off the ball, GAA.
Yeah, as you said, we weren't so efficient with our two-pointers, but I think you have to take the risk with them. I had a chance running through the middle. Like, I was thinking, there's a goal on here, and I'm still 50 yards out. It opened, but you have to take the two-point efforts, I think.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Got plenty to get through today after a very busy week of football involving Irish players and a little bit more than that as well. So, over in England, Keith Andrews' Brentford, they suffered a somewhat surprising defeat at the hands of an out-of-form Brighton, with Nathan Collins starting the game from the bench once again, coming on in the first half and dropping what can only really be described as a bit of a clanger for Danny Welbeck's goal just before half-time to make the game 2-0 in favour of Brighton. We'll dive into whether his current form is of any great concern ahead of March. And speaking of March, who starts up front for Ireland is something that is actually becoming a little more unclear as Prague approaches. On the continent, Evan Ferguson's injury woes don't appear to be going anywhere anytime soon, while Troy Parrott, well, he's already been mentioned, he scored again, obviously. Closer to home over in England, Johnny Kenny, well, he's not flying it at Bolton. And Chiwag Bene isn't really getting a look in for Sheffield United, but we'll explain why that might be about to change, at least in the immediate future. Could we perhaps see a rogue like Sinclair Armstrong emerge as a starting option, however unlikely that may be? He is continuing to show glimpses of form at Bristol City, but it's just the consistency that is letting him down. We'll dive into that, but we've also got to talk about a man who won't be anywhere near the squad in March. Unfortunately, we could do with him, but still warrants a few minutes today. David McGoldrick, he is still scoring bangers at the ripe old age of 38 in League One for Barnsley. Been loads of League of Ireland action over the last few days, so we'll fly through some of the biggest talking points from this round of action. You can get some more depth in that on the League of Ireland pod later on this week, including a bit of a messy story around Michael Noonan's links away from Shamrock Rovers and all of the fallout from the Louth derby last Friday. Of course, we'll also touch on the latest developments around Ireland's clash with Israel, as well as some concerning scenes in Mexico, where, of course, the boys in green are hoping to be playing come June. But before all of that, you may have heard of a footballer called Charlie Oatway. Now, Charlie Oatway is an English former professional footballer who played as a midfielder for Cardiff, Brentford and Brighton, amongst others. But a quirk about Charlie is that he was named after QPR's entire 1973 first team squad, with his birth cert reading Anthony, Philip, David, Terry, Frank, Donald, Stanley, Jerry, Gordon, Reginald, Stephen, James, Oatway. So where am I going with all of this? Well, one name that is in amongst those many is David. And David Wilson is here to my left. How are you, David?
All good. Nice intro.
Yeah, the intro's not finished just quite yet. And of all those names I did mention, one that was not in there was Ben. Ben Symes is to my right. How are you, Ben?
Good. I actually delved into this Charlie Oatway story a couple of weeks ago, and I spent a full afternoon like watching interviews of Charlie Oatway. His story is fascinating. Like he comes from absolutely nothing. He couldn't read or write.
Yeah.
So when he started playing football, he didn't know what his contracts were when they were being put in front of him. He now works as a football development officer.
Yeah.
With Russell Martin's Foundation.
Yeah, it's amazing because he spent some time in prison for something as well.
Yeah,
He's not the worst guy in the world in a weird sort of way with what happened. So you can do a bit of digging into that if you want. Maybe we'll do a whole episode on Charlie Oatway. The reason he came to light really over the last couple of weeks is Paul Merson was speaking about him, basically saying that he marked him one time, and Charlie Oatway was one of the toughest people basically that he ever marked. And people did a bit of digging, found out that his name was slightly peculiar. So
it's all the first names of the
QPR
1973 first team squad.
Yeah, wow, that is incredible.
They're super fans.
Fair play to his parents. If you were if you were to have a child, Ben, and none of us have children here, just so you know. But if you were to have a child, what?
I just want to make a joke there, but I won't do it.
Don't make a joke. No. What? What era, what team would you pick to name your,
oh, wow,
your child? If you had to pick a first 11, which West Ham?
I was just going to say, like, what would I call him? Maybe, like, I don't know.
Alphonse.
Alphonse, Angelo, either Declan, maybe not Declan, Jared. Yeah, Declan, you know, Lucas, maybe not Lucas now either, you know.
Yeah.
I'd maybe go for some of the classics, like, you know, Ricardo or Carlton.
Bobby.
No, I'm not at that. I'm
Ricardo,
more talking.
Ricardo, Vazte, Symes.
Oh, that's wow. Exactly what I'm talking Dimitri. About. Playoff final, Blackpool.
Yeah.
Oh,
I might just fall to one of them.
Yeah.
West Ham.
Ricardo Vazte Symes. I don't know.
Yeah,
we've really gone off topic.
Yeah, no, yeah, exactly.
What did you make my intro? Did you enjoy it? It was good.
We got there in the end.
Yeah, it was quite long.
I was sitting here going, well, how is he going to link this back into us?
Yeah. Well, I did.
So Charlie Oate.
Don't ever doubt me when it comes to linking stuff back into.
No. We never would.
No. Well, you did. But anyway, what have you noted over the course of last week, football-wise, specifically outside of anything else? What have you been doing or watching?
Well, I suppose the most immediate one was we were all at Shamrock Rovers in the dock last night, which is
a very
entertaining game.
Some of us were out in the elements. It was actually quite a nice evening. But
yeah.
And some of us were up in cushy chairs. Ben.
In the press box.
Some of us were working. Some of us didn't leave Tallaght Stadium till midnight, lads.
Ah, look.
You know, some people can skewer off.
Poor journalists.
Some people can skewer off once the full-time whistle goes. Yeah, I had a very busy weekend, actually. Friday night, Loud Derby, which was just absolutely manic.
We'll get into it.
Scenes that I haven't quite seen both in the stadium and outside the stadium in quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
In League of Ireland, a nice old chill enough weekend. Watched a bit of Premier League action, a couple other bits from Holland, and then nice night last night. I love Monday night. I love Monday night League of Ireland.
Yeah,
there's something about like
all the eyes
it's
are
just
on
kicks. Yeah, and you know, like, you walked into the press box last night and everyone's there and you're like at Loud on Friday night there's maybe three or four on national media there.
Yeah.
Like the full press box.
Spread around of all the different
games.
Yeah,
the full press box was national media. It felt like a huge game, you know.
Well, you mentioned the Premier League action at the weekend. I think we should start with Nathan Collins. Something we actually brought up a couple of weeks ago. We sort of, we're not going to give ourselves too credit as we called this was going to happen, but he's obviously not been playing as regularly as we've been used to with Nathan Collins over the last while. Obviously, last season played every minute in the Premier League, I believe, or close to it anyway. And obviously picked up a bit of an injury in training, a bit of a cut. He was put on the bench. Brentford played very well that weekend. Was it Aston Villa or Newcastle that came first in that sequence of
Villa.
Away performances?
Villa, he came on.
Villa, but the four at the back, the two centre-halves they've been playing, were playing well. That continued into the next week. And then into the midweek against Arsenal, where we'd actually talked about this prior to that game, thinking he'd come in maybe in a back three, but they stuck with the back four. He didn't play. Then he did play against Macclesfield in the Cup in a very narrow win on not so great pitch on a Monday evening. And then we had this bit of a nightmare for him at the weekend, to be totally honest. So what I want to first start off with is the direct link to the Republic of Ireland squad in March. He's obviously going to be there. He's obviously going to be starting. But is this of any real concern that he's maybe not playing as frequently as he had been? David, I'll start with you.
Is it concerning that he's not playing? I don't think so. Is it concerning he's not, when he is playing, that he's not playing that well? That is a concern. I think with Nathan Collins as well, like, we hold him to such a high standard because he's so highly thought of and so kind of highly rated. So, you know, we're measuring him against a pretty high bar. What happened on Saturday was quite an obvious mistake. And from maybe some previous Brentford games when Collins has played throughout the season, there has been a couple of errors here and there where he might have got away with it, or, you know, someone came in and rescued the situation. So, yeah, as regards our game or the Ireland game in March, I'm not overly concerned, but I am concerned that he's not playing well. And his confidence, he seems like maybe a bit of a confidence player as well.
Yeah, that's something I did want to come on. I want to throw this over to you, Ben, in the same line of thinking towards March. But he does make these sort of, they're not uncharacteristic because he does it reasonably often, but there's silly sort of mistakes that you don't expect from a player who's held in such high regard. What do you think that's down to? Is it a case of, we don't think it's his ability. Is it a concentration thing? You mentioned confidence. Is it perhaps a bit of overconfidence, a bit of casual nature to his game? What do you think is behind it?
I think Nathan Collins is very confident in his own abilities as a footballer, which I think he should be. You don't play over 100 games in the Premier League without being an excellent footballer. Mm-hmm. I think he's very confident in those abilities. Sometimes maybe, and I'm not micking at Nathan Collins here, but like sometimes you overestimate your capabilities in certain situations. Like trying a flick in the middle of the box.
We should actually detail exactly what happened. The ball did come across the 6 yard box, one where he should probably double on it and clear it further away.
Or
do anything other than really what he did, which is decide to throw a bit of a scorpion. Yeah,
he tried to flick it like a back heel kind of flick, and it's something if you're doing it in a five a side and you do something like that, people are like, "What are you doing?" Like,
seriously.
It's just lazy and a lack of concentration and
is that what you think it is?
Yeah, it is. It's a lack of concentration. And he was only on the pitch
a minute. Yeah, he came on just after the 44th, and this happened after the 45th.
It could be one of his first touches.
I imagine he hadn't had much of a warm up either.
No, but like, these are Premier League players. Yeah. Like, that's not an excuse. Like, you know, like, it's not as if you're playing Sunday League and someone's smoking cigarettes in the sideline kind of thing. Oh, you're coming on. Like, that's obviously not what's happening. So like, it's a concentration thing. And like, one of the basics of defending is, you know, when you're clearing the ball in the box like that and you're facing your own goal, you're not trying to take the leather off the ball. You're just trying to like get a good contact on it and clear it away from goal. The ball's bouncing at an awkward sort of a height. When it's like that, maybe you're better off just trying to head it and trying to head it out of the box, or trying to head it like back where it came from. And he decides to do kind of none of that. Like, he was just and it just looks bad. Like, it just looks bad. It looks like he's overconfident, not really kind of. And like, obviously he's like, it's not as if he doesn't care. He's the club captain, but it's just a really crap situation to give a goal away like that. The thing is though, he will bounce back. Just how he bounces back, like, will he get the opportunity to play in the next couple of games with Brentford? Like, I don't know.
It's hard to know, especially with that four at the back. He seems to fancy the other two as opposed to himself. There's mistakes like that put off the Champions League level clubs that he's been linked to. Is it that severe? Like, yeah.
Yeah, it's extremely blasé. Like, and look, I'm very wary of being hyper-focusing on one mistake from Nathan Collins. Like,
but it's more the fact he hasn't been playing either. He has been taken out of the squad for...
He hasn't been playing. For me, and I would echo what David said, I always think with international football, it's not the crux of it if you're playing week in, week out, 90 minutes at your club level. Mm. Like, you see players, and you see especially other countries, I always think of like the Welsh team that did really well for a couple of years.
Yeah.
You'd have players that you wouldn't hear them outside of international games.
Chris Gunter.
Yeah, there you go. Like, they did absolutely, you could go on and you'd probably stay here for an hour naming a couple of them.
Yeah,
but Al Robson Kanu, remember that?
Like, players who play international football and excel in international football don't necessarily have to be playing week in, week out at a Premier League club or even at a Championship club. My big issue is that when he has been playing recently, he hasn't looked that well. And the only performance that I've kind of seen from in the last 3 months, maybe I'm being harsh, that he's played well in, was the Aston Villa one, where he came on with half an hour to go and played in the middle of a back five, which is a hell of a lot easier than playing in a back four. Yeah. That's my issue really, is that he hasn't been playing well. I've no qualms with him not playing. We've seen players not play international football. Sure, Jack Taylor didn't play a single minute of football between the first and second international window, and then he played
against
both games. So I've no issues with that. It's the form when he is playing.
And would there be any sort of added worry to the fact that when he's played for Ireland, the whole thing, the kind of talk around it was that his performances for Ireland hadn't matched his performances for Brentford? So are we looking at this going, maybe these performances for Brentford, the inverse is going to happen and he's going to start playing out his world for Ireland, or are they going to start matching each other now, which is not be a good thing at all?
No, I don't know. Like, he's played relatively well for Ireland. He has had mistakes in there, and he's had like times where he's coming out of the ball from the back and he's like playing like casual sideways passes and they're either putting his teammate in under pressure or they're nearly being intercepted. So like, that needs to, like, it's just his concentration levels and sometimes his aggression, sometimes I think as well is lacking from time to time. But I've no doubt like he'll sort this out. Like, I think it's just a phase, and like, you're
not going to be perfect 100%.
No, your playing career is, you know, a lot linear. Like, it's going to have ups and downs. So I wouldn't have any overarching concerns long term, but he needs to sort it out. And like, there are, the only thing is, like, from an Irish perspective, there are quite a lot of good centre backs.
But this is what I was going to come on to actually just now, before we're happy enough to move away from Nathan Collins.
I want to say, like, there's also this part where we hold Nathan Collins to such a high standard compared to the other centre halves that we do have.
Yeah,
so when he makes a mistake like that, we're sitting here critically analysing. With all due respect to the likes of, I'm thinking of Championship centre halves, if Daryl Shea makes a mistake like that on a Saturday, are we even mentioning it? Whereas we talk about it for 6 minutes with Collins. Yeah. Like, we do hold him at a high standard for a reason. Yeah. Because he is, we know the capabilities that Nathan Collins
has. He's supposed to be the guy.
He is the guy, like, yeah. And we know that. So you're very wary when you're being critical of him like this, going, the reason why we're being critical of him is because we expect, and I know he would expect
absolutely
his forms to be up here.
Yeah.
You know, very quickly, actually, can I say before you move on, Nathan Collins,
away, man. Work away.
What does the number 879 mean to you?
It's the one before 880 and the one after 870.
Spot on. No. 879 is the number of players who have made over 100 Premier League appearances since 2002, 2003. 879, all 879 have faced James Milner. Nathan Collins was the last man to do it at the weekend.
Oh, because he came...
Because he came on the bench.
Yeah, oh, wow. Yeah.
He hadn't faced Milner yet.
A bit of a fraud. It's not fraudulent. It's obviously incredible. No, no.
And so every player who's played over 100 caps since 2000, over 100 Premier League appearances since 2002 has played against James Milner.
I'm not saying that's fraudulent. Bizarre. That is bizarre, and that is a great stat. I just was more pointing to, you know, Gareth Barry's feet is still far more impressive than James Milner.
I think so too.
Yeah. Just the sheer amount more minutes he's played. I think he's completed like a couple more seasons than Milner. But great stat, Ben. That's brilliant. But the other, well done you. Nah, I'm joking.
Well done.
The patronising there is Joe. I'm only messing.
Gives another 3 minute intro.
The other centre halves we wanted to touch on. Mm-hmm. Two I wanted to bring up that were not in our squads, haven't been in the squads the last couple of international windows. Andrew Omavamadele and James Bankwa. James Bank was flying for Watford in the Championship at the minute, and Omavamadele has started and finished the last, I think he might have come off in the 90th minute in one of them, but the last two games he's played 90 minutes for Strasbourg over in France and picked up a very good win against Lyon,
who are in high flying form.
And we should mention that Pavel Sulk, who's been one of their better players this season, is Czech. It would have been a star for them in March, still might be, but he'd go off injured. I'm not sure the details of exactly how long he's going to be out for. But ideally he'd be out for March, and then he goes on and has a long and fruitful and successful career, but obviously not too successful. But yeah, Omavamadele and Abankwa. I do struggle with that name, and it annoys me.
Omavamadele?
I spit it out, but
yeah.
I'm a big fan of his, and I think he has all the tools to be as good as any of the defenders we have. But is there a world where they're in the mix come March, Abankwa and
I
and
think
Andrew?
So. I think Omavamadele, but the signs of things were, like, this last couple of weeks, we're literally picking everybody in the squad, but I think Andrew Omavamadele has a massive ceiling, I think. Like, he was so highly rated at Norwich that there was links to going to AC Milan and different clubs, and obviously we know where Italian football is now, but yeah, he made the move to Forest obviously, and he's now made this move to Strasbourg, who are obviously basically a developmental side for Chelsea, and he's surrounded by
some of the best young talent in the world,
surrounding him. So yeah, I think he's definitely in a good place. He's out of the Premier League spotlight, which I think is a good thing for maybe his development. He's still quite young, and from what we've seen of him in an Ireland shirt, when he came on in that game against Portugal that time for his first cap under Stephen Kenny, when John Egan scored the goal and Ronaldo scored the two late goals.
Yeah.
He looked sensational. He played in a game against Serbia at home. It was 0-0 draw. Or was it 1-1? It was
1-1.
Yeah. And he had an effort about 25 yards out, just laid on, nearly cracked in the top corner. He has so much ability. He's a bit of a Rolls Royce defender. And he actually got into the Forest team under obviously Forest is a complete kind of mess sometimes. Yeah. But he actually did get in that team for a while and kind of held his place before he got injured. And that's been his big problem.
He was left out in the cold after that. We've seen many a good player happen to it.
Injuries, like you said there, injuries is the big thing from Bamadeli.
And that's even been the case this season.
Yeah,
he's having a pretty decent season.
Yeah.
And up until a couple of weeks ago, he had probably had his most consistent run in the team and then got injured again. And now he's back again, obviously under a new manager since Liam Senior's left. Gary O'Neill is there at the minute.
I did notice that he started over Anselmino. Who played for Dortmund. He's obviously on loan from Chelsea.
Yeah.
Played for Dortmund first half of the season, and they've moved him to Strasbourg, even though, because Dortmund wanted to sign him permanently, basically. And
he didn't want to go either.
Yeah, and Chelsea were no, we want to keep you, buddy, so we're taking you away from Dortmund. And he's starting over him for Strasbourg. If Omavamadele can stay fit, 100%, there's a world where he starts for Ireland in a back three.
Yeah.
The other player, James Bankwa, I have a serious soft spot for James Bankwa. He came through St. Patrick's Athletic.
Of course.
And I remember seeing him at 17 years of age. Well, I actually was at his debut for Pats. He's a Longford man.
Yeah.
I was there at his debut for Pats. And he played Roy Full.
Mm.
Unbelievable footballer.
Yeah.
At that age. And it's similar at the moment when I watch Vinnie Leonard didn't have his greatest game last night, but when you watch Vinnie Leonard playing out of football, he plays like he's 10 years older.
Yeah.
James Banco always did that. And what I love about Banco is he never has been afraid to get stuck in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I know that everyone will always call to that challenge with 30 seconds into the Watford game, you know, the flying, but like, that is part and parcel of his game.
Yeah.
But not only that, he's brilliant with the ball at his feet.
Play football, yeah.
Which is something that maybe we don't see too much for Ireland mixed with the tenacity that he has on the other end. I don't think realistically a Banco is going to start for Ireland in March.
No. I don't think either.
I think we could see
Ombam Dele on the pitch in March.
Yeah. I think if he's fit and he keeps this run of form going up until March, but we move away from the defence.
He hasn't been capped since 2024, Ombam Dele. Like,
yeah, but he hadn't been playing for the majority of.
Yeah, it's injuries.
And injuries as well.
Well, he was out in the cold at Forest and then had the injury and then went to Strasbourg and was playing and then got injured again. Mm. And actually, funnily enough, had been playing but picking up injuries on the eve of squads being announced over the last couple of months. Two players for you to keep an eye on over the next little while.
We did have him on Off the Ball Breakfast, Matthew. You interviewed him a few weeks, so if you scroll back up in your podcast feed, Andrew on the Bamdale interview there with Matthews there for you. Yeah, available.
There's some old stuff from James at Banquet there and throughout the records as well from Off the Ball Breakfast in the past.
So a chance now with less than 2 minutes to go. Kempers versus Shelton.
Kempes, the star of Argentina's first World Cup triumph in 1978, scored a whopping 303 goals over the course of his career, which included spells at Valencia, Rosario Central, River Plate and Instituto. But what if his career had taken a different path and ended up at Spurs? Well, just years after helping his nation win their first World Cup, he nearly joined his fellow countrymen in Ozzy Ardiles and Ricky Villa at the North London club. But why didn't the deal get over the line? Well, in episode 4 of Richie McCormack's Sliding Doors, Richie explains why the transfer didn't come to fruition for one of the best strikers in the world of the 70s and 80s. Find this week's episode in your OTB Football podcast feed for free each and every Monday. You can also go back and listen to the other episodes in this series focusing on Michael Laudrup, Pelé and Ronaldo. Subscribe in your OTB Football podcast feed now.
We'll go to the other end of the pitch before we get on to some other stuff. Troy Parrott scored again. It's mad that we just kind of say he scored again and we move on. Like how long did we spend looking for someone to start scoring goals? I think that was his 24th goal of the season. If we're sticking with this formation, we don't really spend too much time on it because I think there's a pretty simple answer to this question. But when we head over to Prague, who's going to be partnering Troy Parrott, if you like?
Chirozek Bene, if he's fit.
Chirozek Bene, but like,
we can add a bit of context in the Bene there.
He hasn't been playing, we'll go on to Ferguson in a few minutes, but maybe stick a bit of meat in the bones here for what's going on in the Ogbeni situation.
Yeah, well, I think people know Ogbeni is obviously on loan at Sheffield United, picked up an injury in the game for Ireland against Hungary and hadn't played for a couple of months after that. And reports have come out that Chris Wilder wasn't too keen on keeping him around, even when he did get back to full fitness. And then Wilder obviously saw something in him, saw that his attitude was correct. That's the word he used. He had good attitude. He was playing with the 21s, wanted to play for Sheffield United, so he kept him around and did. He's featured now in one squad since that game. He came on against Oxford and scored a goal, but hasn't been in the last couple of weeks. And the main reason for that is the fact that, I'm not sure if it's the same in the Premier League or in other leagues, but in the EFL you can only have 5 players on loan in your matchday squad on any given week. And Sheffield United, because they started the season so poorly and changed manager, they did a good bit of business and brought in some loan players. And as well as that, one of their better players, Andre Brooks, he's a winger. So he's in direct competition with him. But Calvin Phillips got a pretty ridiculous red card in the Steel City Derby on Sunday morning. So he won't be able to be in the squads over next while. So there might be a little bit, although they're completely different players. The fact yeah. that there's an opening there for him to get back into the squad. I'm not sure if they're playing tonight or tomorrow, but they're playing midweek. So we'll yeah. see if he's involved there. But he hasn't been getting minutes. And as we mentioned, neither has Evan Ferguson. So it's not as ideal as perhaps it was coming into the last window. What do you reckon, Ben?
No, and look, I was reading about this Ferguson news the other day. And it's the ankle again, and there's talk of surgery. And like, if we didn't have a game in March and a potential World Cup down the line, Evan Ferguson would have been on that surgery table last week. The thing that's, you know, the carrot in the corner was I is March in the World Cup. I don't see a world at the moment where he starts in March.
No,
I really don't. I don't even know if he's fit enough to play a role off the bench. Which is mad to think that if you thought this in September that we'd get to a playoff and you could say it won't be the end of the world if Evan Ferguson isn't playing. Like we saw in November, we can win games without him up top, and Troy is by far our most informed player across the board. My worry is that other player alongside him. Like I said earlier, I've no issues with players who aren't playing international football. Who aren't playing football, club football, coming into international football. My one probably caveat to that is players who, like Ogbene, who are so athletic, so reliant on your muscles being able to last for 90 minutes, and especially hamstrings, being able to last running up and down nonstop for 90 minutes. That's my one caveat to that. And how much of a shift is he able to put in when he starts? And when he does, who is coming off the bench for him? Are they playing football? Because, I mean, if you look at the other options we have, there's not a whole host of them who are playing regular football yeah. for their club.
Yeah. I think just on, like, when we have these conversations around, like, Ireland, the team, squad, sometimes we kind of, we just automatically, I think it's just an Irish kind of thing where we speak quite negatively about it. But I think if you're going to take, like, the positive maybe element of this is that Ogbene should be fresh coming into these games.
Yeah.
You know,
like, there's always that, yeah.
He seems like he's fit. He seems like he's back.
He is fit. He's rare. He's not injured.
Like,
yeah.
Like, let's, like, his match fitness might need a bit of work and
a bit of fine tuning. Yeah.
Yeah, but like, he's had to come back from a serious, serious injury. Like, and a player that kind of relies on his explosivity, his lightning quick pace, like, to have that kind of snap of his Achilles was just a horrific kind of injury to have.
I don't want to make it negative again, but just on that, like, him coming back from the injury, like, when he did feature in those first couple of World Cup qualifiers after not playing for his club, he wasn't good at all.
No.
And then he did get a run with Sheffield United and he came back and it was like, whoa, I think I actually remember using the phrase on something we did, saying that it was night and day, complete night and day. So you just hope that.
Yeah.
Now, there's a difference between coming back from injury and not having match fitness. He has got the matches in, and I know he has been injured in the meantime, but it's not quite the same injury.
No, like, he's nearly a better player sometimes when Ireland, he's maybe a better player against the ball, like, let's say.
Yeah,
like, he is.
He's an outlet. Like,
he causes so many problems for defenders with his strength, his pace.
He's deceptively strong.
Yeah, and like, he is going to be an out ball, and Ireland are going to have to suffer against the Czech Republic. They're going to have to sit in at times, and I don't think there's a better player in the Ireland squad that can hold the ball up, that can run in behind, that can track back than Chidozie Ogbene. He's so important to Ireland. He's so important to, like, the squad as a leader in that group
for
as
sure.
well. He's incredibly important to him or Hal Grimson as well. He's been an absolute find for Ireland, coming from Cork City, going to the first division at Limerick, and then having an unbelievable career in England, in fairness to him. So I think it's like, he'll definitely have to start. We'll hopefully have to maybe keep him wrapped in cotton wool over in Sheffield for a while for the next few weeks, and that's no problem. And then after that, like, we just need someone to maybe come off the bench at 70 minutes.
Yeah.
I want to know who you think should be.
Hear me out on this one.
This is going to be wild.
No, it's not. I hope it's not.
Is there a world where Jack Moylan comes off the bench for Ireland to play
March? Come on.
That's not where I thought he was going to go.
No, like
you're going to mention Johnny Kenny.
We're not going to mention Johnny Kenny.
No.
Like,
he's playing in the same league as the guy who's literally the most informed player in the EFL right now.
Yeah, that's fair enough. But like, you need like a player in probably that stage of a game, and hopefully Ireland's still in the game, or hopefully they're leading at that stage, where they're going to have like, their attributes are going to have to be more physical than technical, I think. So, like, someone like, Big Sinclair thing. Armstrong, like Adam Eady, maybe Adam Eady gets back fit.
I think we will do the discussion because that's what we're here to do. And I am intrigued by it. But if Eady's fit, he's going to be there.
Yeah, it's going to be Adam Eady. Of course it is.
But I actually had this noted down for a little later on. The Jack Moylan thing, like he is in absolutely outrageous.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, other than Troy Parrott, there's no Irish player that's in this form right now.
Yeah, of course. But like to make that step from League One into international football in this game is like.
Won't happen in this
it's
game.
It's not happening. Like,
there's talk of like Johnny Kenny is a name who's going to be talked about in the squad.
I think Johnny. Yeah, but that's
I personally. I there is. Yeah, but that and is like that he, is the thing. The thing it is previous. They are very different players. Also, yeah. I know you know that.
And he came on in the game in Hungary. Like he was there. So
but he only came on because it was injuries.
Yeah, but
that's the only reason why Johnny Kenny had a shot there.
Yeah, but he was there.
So there's going to be injuries in this game again. So there's going to be a role for another player to step in. Why can't that be Jack Moylan?
Because he's not that type of player. He's a very technical. Like gets the ball into his feet. Like you're going to have someone who's like a bit of a powerhouse. Like someone's going to hold the ball up. Someone's going to occupy the last line of defense. You're going to have the Czech defenders thinking we can't like leave space in behind. Like if it's going to be Jack Moylan, then they're going to go in and like press him. They're going to get after him. Like it's going to be so hard to keep the ball. If you're bringing on Jack Moylan for Finnezaz, maybe like that's the sub. But hopefully you don't have to make that sub because hopefully Finnezaz has been really well. But. That's the only reason he gets into the team. There's no way he's getting into the team. Like, no way he's getting into the team. It's going to have to be like a proper, solid number nine.
What has Sinclair Armstrong shown you that he in an Ireland shirt or in any shirt, he can play in this team?
I'm not saying he can play in the team. I'm saying that
he's definitely shown he can run a defence. Mm. Yeah. He can absolutely run the hell out of a defence.
Sorry, I'm not saying Sinclair Armstrong has no abilities. I'm just saying in comparison to the literal most informed player in the EFL.
Yeah, but like...
I know they're going to be in first position, but they're like...
It's such a nuanced game.
More different.
Yeah, it's such a nuanced game where you're like... I'd love to have Jack Moylan in the team and like we play all this like intricate ticky-tacky football, which we won't be playing. Like, it's not going to happen. We tried that before. Won't happen.
You don't need to play tiki-taka football to have a technical player in the team. Like
you can only have room for maybe like let's say one out and out technical player. And Finnezaz has more physical capabilities than Jack Moylan. He just does. Sinclair Armstrong or Adam Eady are the by far the most likely players that will come on for a Chidoze Ogbeni. Or like I don't think you're going to change the system. You're going to have like 5-3-2 or 3-5-2 or a variation of it. I can't see unless like you're maybe pushing for the game, or maybe you're 2 goals down, maybe you're 2-1 down, maybe you're chasing a goal, you need another creative midfielder on the pitch. Maybe that's when Jack Moylan comes on. Maybe he gets into the squad. I can't see him getting into a squad. And as well, we have all this kind of noise from people like us, from fans, about like the next big thing. And Jack Moylan hopefully is the next big thing. But like this isn't the time for the next big thing. This is the time where we have to win now. And whatever they are, him or Al Grimson or Paddy McCarthy and John O'Shea decide to do in the next two games, all they're thinking of is getting to a World Cup. They're not thinking about the development of the team. They're not thinking about the Euros in 2028. They're thinking these two games, we win them, we're in the World Cup. There's no room for kind of let's have a go, let's have a look and see what this player.
For sure, they'd be looking at Sinclair Armstrong as well.
Of course they have. But he's a different player.
That's the same argument, like.
Well, he's capped for Ireland. Like, I mean, like he's made senior international appearances. Like,
how many caps has Sinclair Armstrong?
Not many, two? But like, yeah, but not many. But
has he played in the Hamer?
No, he's been playing at a significantly higher level.
Yeah, he's Boyle playing the Championship as well. Like, you know,
but he's not really playing. He comes off the bench. I know he scored the week.
Ben, like, come on, like this is like.
You're arguing against one. I'm just giving you an example of the most informed player in the EFL is a striker.
He's
as
playing
you said,
one.
We were. Johnny Kenny's playing in League One.
I'm not.
Johnny Kenny came off the bench versus Budapest in Budapest
when he was playing for Celtic.
When he was playing for Celtic in a league that when Celtic are not playing European teams, they're playing teams that are League One level or below.
Jack Moylan's not really playing up front either. For
yeah, he's not. Like,
but
it's,
you're
going to
have two. You're
going to
have two strikers
like,
up top.
We can have a debate about two different things. Like, but
yeah.
I don't think there's a world where Jack Moylan gets
okay. We must move on. But let us know what you guys think. And I tell you one thing that will maybe I think you can both agree on that. Outside of March, which obviously is the sole focus at the minute, I can't wait for those. There's obviously other things going on, but the squads that come around the Nations League games that we do end up playing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited to see what difference there is.
Yeah.
What the plan is, who they get in, who gets a go, who do we get to see? Because that position that Ogbeni is is kind of occupying at the minute. There are a lot of guys there who are playing at the same level as Agbene in the championship who are doing like quite well. People we haven't seen before, like Emily Ali, who's not going to be in there in March, yeah. I don't think, but is this similar sort of player. He's quite raw. He's yeah. very quick, gets in behind, and can score a goal. There's loads of little players like that. As you mentioned, Jack Moylan, more than likely, is going to be playing at championship level next season too.
Can I just ask something really quick? Robbie Brady, what's the update there?
He started and played, I think, a half with the 21s last week with Preston. Hasn't been in a matchday squad. He might have played a 21s game in between, I'm not entirely sure, but he hasn't been in a squad for Preston just yet, but he's playing. Like, you know, he's on the grass, he's playing games yeah. for the 21s. So
hopefully he's been tuned up for peaking in March.
Yeah, exactly, and that's going to be crucial.
Yeah.
We'll go to the League of Ireland. Mm-hmm. We won't spend much time at all, really, on the Michael Noonan stuff. Ben was chatting to Stephen Bradley last night. You can go check that out in your OTB football feed on our socials as well, wherever you get your stuff.
Yep.
He discussed that there, and it just seems like a bit of a crazy situation. So we'll have to see how that one develops. The Louth derby between Drogheda and Dundalk last week threw up a bit of a something that's kind of caught a little bit of light in the media.
It had its live line. Yesterday.
It did, and
you knew that Kieran Cuddihy liked the League of Ireland, huh? Yeah.
Well, who knew that half the country.
I'm not sure if I'm allowed to mention his name in this office anymore, but anyway.
Ben, yeah. You were there.
I was.
Talk to me.
It's hard to say to people what hasn't already been said now. I got up to Dundalk on Friday night, absolutely buzzing for this game. And I got up to Dundalk at just around 6 o'clock. It was an 8 o'clock kickoff. And I was going to park just outside the train station. And as I'm going towards the train station, see a couple of blue lights behind me in the rear view mirror of my car, and I think, it's obviously just a car going by on the way to the game. I pull in. Oh, it's a public order van. Oh, there's a second public order van. Mm. There's a third.
Oh, wow.
And there's about 30 men dressed in black running up towards the train station behind them, and I'm going, right, this is about to all kick off.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of stuck outside the train station. I look in, and the guards are trying to urgently close the gates in the train station, and there's a Drogheda train has arrived in. There's a lot of Drogheda fans coming out the train station, and then there's objects being thrown in, there's flares being lit, and that's when you really got the sense of, okay, this could kick off here tonight. I haven't actually seen much talk about this incident at the train station at all. Obviously, it's had its live moment, and it's all been out the pitch. It's been nothing about safety of actual people who are there. It's all been about ministers who are concerned about money that's been spent on pitches and a concern
his money.
Yeah, his own money. His apparently. Money.
I won't be paying
that. No. And look, I'm wary of going in too hard on.
No, we can go in hard on Minister Patrick O'Donovan. You can, like, he's in public office.
My issue, but a lot of my issue there is that there's only real concern about a synthetic pitch and not concern about people's safety. And I do love pyro and I love flares at football matches, but like, let's be honest, and I'm sure you felt the same, where I've been in stands and I'm looking at people with pyro and I'm going, you should not be holding that.
Yeah.
Like, that is a health and safety risk, you holding that. I've seen little kids at League of Ireland matches light off a flare. The flare lights off. They've had this idea in their head of what they're going to have, and they're holding the flare, and all of a sudden they've got a fire in their hand. And as you would when you're 10, 11 years of age, like, there's no other word for it. You shit yourself. Like.
Yeah.
So what do? You throw it. I've seen kids throw flares into groups where other people are in matches. Like, I love pyro and I love that extra added atmosphere it gives to League of Ireland and that bit of difference and authenticity. But when it comes to harming people, like we saw on Friday night when a 12-year-old gets injured, you just cannot have that.
No.
That cannot happen.
No, and like, the fact is, it was kind of premeditated. It was actually kind of flagged beforehand that this Absolutely. Was going to happen. And what happened to the pitch is a disgrace, really. Like, it's not a facility just for like the Dundalk men's first team. There's mm-hmm. there's academy teams, there's women's teams that all have to use that pitch as well. So what happened is, yeah, and it's the actions of, you know, a couple kind of idiots, and Vinnie Perrott mentioned this last night on the news round as well. So, like, this is a very small minority in what is a hugely colourful, diverse and
important.
Very important and very kind of positive League of Ireland community.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of given people like what's happening now with Patrick O'Donovan, the Minister for Sport. Like, I'm like, we've had a whole history in this country of Minister for like people who are appointed as Minister for Sport and not having any clue about sport in general, that's the kind of part of course for...
Yeah, it's sport and a couple of others. Yeah.
Or about certain sports.
Yeah, yeah. Like, what did Leo Varadkar know about any sport? Like, not much, like, or Shane Ross or whatever else. This was a chance for Patrick O'Donovan, and he'd done an interview on RTÉ where, like, he was just basically kind of allowed to kind of go unchallenged, really, about, like, this is the criminalisation and the victimisation of football fans. And he was towering the entire Drogheda United fan base with this kind of line, the lines of thuggery and all that kind of stuff, which is completely wrong. And don't get me wrong, what Drogheda United fans done, what the small collection of few people did was not right. Like, to say stuff like, oh, we're going to pause all funding for League of Ireland synthetic pitches. So we're going to
not just League of Ireland. There's going to be kids, like, this is kids in academies. Yeah. It's not senior level League of Ireland.
So we're going to punish the entire League of Ireland, you know, kind of population, I guess, because of the actions of a couple of mindless idiots is ridiculous. And that should be called out. And he's been speaking again today. And he's, you know, there's even a suggestion of, you know, playing these matches behind closed doors. But no, let's have the match with Israel and Ireland go ahead, you know, with you know, full of fans in the Aviva Stadium. You know, he's going to be the Minister for Sport next year. What's happening when? We're going to have the Ryder Cup next year. We're going to have the Irish Open
in his own Ryder Cup in his own home county.
Yeah, and we're going to have the Irish Open in Clare, and Donald Trump's doing big this year. So he's going to be there, open armed to Donald Trump, who is currently sending a massive flotilla of US Army warships to the Middle East for potential strikes on Iran, which is kind of crazy. And this is only after the extraction of Nicolas Maduro from Venezuela. So, you know, we can all pander to the Americans, and we can all, like, say, we can, you know, they're so important for our economy, and they're so important for to earn money for the country and stuff like that. But, like, you know, the 500,000 that we give to Dundalk, you know, you should be grateful for that, and you should have, we give you this handout. Like, there's no investment being in the League of Ireland for years and years and years. And the thing is that the government won't care, but they'll make an example of this. But when a GA referee gets attacked on a football field, there's not too many government ministers coming out talking about that, is there? So that's where I kind of lie in the whole issue.
It's also going to cost Dundalk personally themselves 70,000 to fix his pitch. So you referenced it briefly there, right? Talking about Gaelic games, and, like, the three of us all have participated in Gaelic games and watched Gaelic games and still 10 matches. So this is not a slight on Gaelic games. This is from people who are involved in that community as well. The three of us.
Yeah. Volunteers. But there's volunteers that also work in...
The League of Ireland is run by volunteers.
Yeah.
And always has. Yeah. When I started going to League of Ireland matches as a child, there was very, very few people in a paid role at any club across the League of Ireland. I know it's different now because the money came in, but that's not money coming
in. It's the same with football, soccer, football as a whole, in that there's a perception that, like, GAA clubs and the GAA have, like, monopolised and taken over and owned the idea of volunteerism. And that's not necessarily an intentional thing on their behalf, but it's just a perception that exists in that people who coach an under 16 soccer team are somehow getting paid to do that when they really aren't, unless of course it's perhaps at
the GAA, like, GAA is like as a huge industry now, like, look at payments to coaches and managers.
Money that has came in for these clubs to turn volunteers, by the way, they're not like appointing, all they're doing is turning the people who've been volunteers for 20 years into actually coaches, giving them some money for the work they're doing. And the money that has been brought in to do that at clubs is not money from the government. It's money from Europe and qualifying for European competitions.
Yeah.
The money you make from winning a league is not equivalent to making one round of European football. So, and you have a minister who goes up to, I'm worried to say, his first League of Ireland game. I don't know how many games.
He said that he'd been at a few.
He'd been at a few, right. Who went up to Oriel Park, or as he called it, the Dundalk Stadium, even though the Dundalk Stadium's actually down the road in a completely different sport.
And used images of the flares in his own
in his own image. Now look, there's another part of it where Drogheda United Ultras Group, the 45, produce their own video of the flares with someone on the pitch, which means someone had to have accreditation, we presume. Mm-hmm. That's what should happen to be on the pitch. So there is an element of this was premeditated and was known. And I did kind of, I was a bit surprised when I saw the flares, and I had a video up on my own Twitter, which got a lot of traction, of the flares, because I walked by that away end on the way to entering the official entrance for press to Oriel Park. And the away entrance was, to use a Patrick Dunham phrase, plagued with Gardaí. So I didn't suspect this would come at all. I knew it'd be a flu. Like, you knew it'd be flares coming onto the pitch, and you knew this would happen, and you knew with the away end and in the dock especially, it's so spoken about, you knew this would happen.
Yeah.
But the reaction that has fallen out from this, and I spoke to Kieran Kilduff last night, and Kieran Kilduff said, it's a disgrace and we couldn't train on the pitch on Saturday morning, and that's not just our senior team, that's all the women, that's all young kids who train at the Dundalk pitch, can't do that anymore. But also what was really important is what he said to me was, I don't want the book thrown at anyone for this.
No.
This should not be collective punishment for every single, not just every single League of Ireland senior club, but every single academy is now being collectively punished for the action of what? 50 fans? 100 fans?
Yeah. Just before we move on, like, I know we want to move on here, but like, just the football fan culture in Ireland is something that's class. Like, it's something that's really, really cool. Like, last night, myself and yourself, Matthew, we had the opportunity. We could have stayed in and watched, you know, Everton, Manchester United on TV.
Took the opportunity.
But, yeah. But we decided to go out to, like, to Tala, and the Monday night games in the League of Ireland really kind of suit me anyway. But Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk, and it was just great. Like, there was a lot of kids, good atmosphere, like, good crowd up from Dundalk.
Great crowd.
Yeah, like, and just like proper, like, Dundalk, like, you made the comment after the game last night, Matthew, about, I'd say maybe 30 or 40 Dundalk fans had this kind of cool, like, banner. You know, they thought our days are numbered, like, basically they thought the club was going under again.
I had to ask Ben what it said.
It's a reference to a Liverpool song. The Liverpool song is, they thought our days are numbered. The Dogs have managed said they thought our days are over, so obviously ran out of characters.
Whatever it was, like, it doesn't really matter. Like, but it, I mean, like these young fellas could be doing X, Y, and Z on Monday night, but like, they're actually, you know, trying to organise this, trying to organise, like,
they take great pride in it.
Yeah.
And it's not to, like, kind of any, there's no, like, preconception of what these lads will be doing otherwise, but
no,
it's always good to see.
But sport and football, it's like bringing people together, and it
gives you a bit of a purpose.
Yeah, and in a kind of environment that we live in now, like, the League of Ireland is the centre of it, so many great things. Like, this is, like, last night we seen, like, Michael Noonan, Victor Osimhuna, Vinnie Leonard,
Adam Brennan,
like, four lads that, like, they might not play for the Irish senior team. But they all might, like, one or two of them might play for the Irish senior team. It's such an opportunity to see these lads, and I think it's just, the League of Ireland is should be known for way more positive stories.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have to highlight both sides of it equally, I think. Maybe not even equally, but, you know, yeah, I do have to highlight both sides of it. And yeah, it's just as a personal kind of anecdotal thing, like, I would have grown up in a, like, I keep having to say soccer because we've talked about GAA, like, soccer centric household in a very GAA centric area, and wouldn't really have any League of Ireland club anywhere near me, like Westmead, for full clarity, if anyone wanted to know. Athlone is obviously in Westmead, but I don't live anywhere near Athlone, so I wouldn't have been going to LOI games at all when I was young, and I've only really taken the opportunity to go over the last couple of years when I've been in Dublin that a little bit more. And I have to say, I've thoroughly enjoyed every single game I've gone to, and majority of them have been over in Tala, just out of pure handiness. And I've sat in the away end twice and the home end twice. So, Cork fans there last year when things weren't going so well, still made some good noise. The few that were there, Dundalk last night was brilliant. I was at Pats and Rovers on Friday, and yeah, just a thoroughly enjoyable experience. And I'd hate to think that something like this, and maybe the way this has been portrayed in some facets by, across maybe what you're seeing on social media, I'd like to think it wouldn't put people off going to see games, and I don't think it will, because the fan base is only growing.
Yeah, and I suppose at a kind of a strike back at, like, kind of like traditional Ireland, like, the League of Ireland is, like, our thing. Like, it's like this separate community, and they nearly used to always, like, kind of live outside the international team as well.
Yeah,
so this is why, like, flares, banners, tifos, all that kind of stuff is, like, it's way different to what you get watching the Premier League. You know, being part of something, going to a game, it's just way better experience than
and it's amazing to see some like
or anything or the big league.
Amazing to see so many old heads with young heads and they're walking off. Yeah. You know, they might have bumped into each other in the stairwell on the way down and they're saying, yeah, just it was great to get the last minute equalizer there or whatever. You're heading on Friday and like, this lad could be in his 80s and
yeah.
And young Flick could be 16, you know. And yeah. These people never cross paths at all. We do have to move on.
Can I make a very quick comment before we finish up, right? You mentioned there about it used to be its own community. And how it's grown so much over the years. Aimerhal Grimson was there last night, which is the first point. Like the men's national team managers at these games. Men's national team manager who doesn't always live in Ireland was at this game, playing for this game. There was a lot of talk. I've been at three matches now so far as a reported season. Obviously, the second week we saw games get called off. So the first one I was at was Bowes versus Pats in the Aviva Stadium, which was 21,472, which is going to be the highest attendant League of Ireland match this season in the league. There was a lot of chatter around that game at the time and people looking at a half-empty Aviva Stadium and saying, that's a joke. That's 15,000-16,000 more people that would have been at that game if it was at Daly Mount Park. I was at the two games over the weekend. So I was at Dundalk versus Drogheda on Friday night in a full stadium, basically, in Oriel Park. Last night was half full. And I saw a lot of chatter online after the game about people giving out about the amount of green empty seats in Shamrock Rovers. And I agree, it doesn't look great, right? But I was at a full stadium on Friday night and there was 3,819 people there. I was at a half empty Shamrock Rovers Stadium last night and there was 4,352 people there. If you just build these facilities bigger, so what if you have a couple more empty seats? You have an extra 1,000 fans in there that would not have been there if the stadium is smaller.
I don't know, like yeah, but it's Monday night. The Monday night games are
It's a Monday night game. For people who are giving out about 4,352 fans going to a game on Monday night and saying, oh, look at the half empty seats in a stadium.
It's like, a cold night in February as well, and the season's only started, like, you know.
And you know as well as we do, Tala Stadium in the winter.
It's the coldest place in the world.
There is not. It's a bit better with the two stands in behind the goal.
Just.
Yeah.
Coldest place on world.
Yeah. Yeah. We've got a little under 10 minutes left to get through the rest of this here. I'm going to go on a bit of a solo run here. Jump in whenever you like. Dave McGoldrick. I want to talk about Dave McGoldrick before we go. We've been a cult hero of Irish football. Played 14 times, scored one goal. But what a 14 times it was. He scored an absolute worldie at the weekend in a Yorkshire derby. He was having this bit of a debate this morning with Arthur, who was actually at the game. Mm-hmm. It's not the Yorkshire derby, but it's a Yorkshire derby between Huddersfield and Barnsley. And he scored an absolute worldie in that game. And it's not the first worldie he scored this season, right? Just want to bring you through the last four seasons of Dave McGoldrick, right? He's 38 now, okay? So, four seasons ago, he was playing in League One, same level he's at now, for Derby. They got promoted. He scored 22 goals and got 5 assists in 39 games at the age of 35. Following season, didn't fancy the Championship, so he said, right, do you know what? I'll jump down back to League Two, make it easy for myself.
His hometown, one of his hometown clubs.
Yeah, where he started his career. Where he started his career in Notts County. 12 goals and 4 assists in 37 games, age 36. Season after that, he said, right, I'll give it another go. We'll try to get them up. We'll try to get promoted. 17 goals and 3 assists in 36 games, age 37. They lost in the playoff semi-final, unfortunately. So you're thinking, right, might pack it in, might give it another go at Notts County, try to get them up. No, he gets a call from his old friend, Conor Howard, who's a couple of years younger than him, managing Barnsley. He joins them, he's played 26 times this season. And you look at his boat ways, he's played a lot of 90 minutes at the age of 38. He's also come off the bench. So make it out what you will. He scored 9 goals and got 2 assists in 26 games at the age of 38 so far this season for Barnsley. I mean, that is just remarkable.
All-time EFL kind of legend.
He is, absolutely. And I want to, I know Wikipedia is not always the greatest place to go, right? But I just want to read you, right? The paragraph that's here on his international career, right? This is remarkable. And I think actually plays a part. I'm not sure how many people know this, but plays a part in how the high regard that he is held in. In 2014, Dave McGoldrick, who was adopted, discovered that he was eligible to play for Ireland after researching his family tree and finding that he had a biological grandfather born in Ireland. McGoldrick turned down an approach by Scotland manager Gordon Strachan at the time to play for the country, stating that he would prefer to play for Ireland. Ipswich manager Mick McCarthy encouraged McGoldrick to represent the boys in green. Ipswich teammate Stephen Hunt and Daryl Murphy backed McGoldrick for an Ireland call-up. In 2014, Ireland manager Martin O'Neill confirmed that McGoldrick was in his plan, subject to paperwork. On the 10th of November 2014, McGoldrick received his first call-up to the Irish squad for the games against Scotland and the United States. He made his debut in a 4-1 win over the United States, providing 2 assists for Anthony Pilkington and Robbie Brady goals. I'm nearly finished here. McGoldrick scored his first goal for the Republic of Ireland on the 5th of September 2019. Obviously his only goal, scoring the equaliser in a 1-1 draw with Switzerland at the Aviva Stadium in Dublin in a Euro 2020 qualifying match. The final paragraph here, right? In August 2020, David McGoldrick was named the 2019 FAI Senior International Player of the Year. He announced his retirement from international football 3 months later, on the 4th of November, citing a wish to spend more time with his family and focus on his club career. I mean, talk about a an Indian summer that he's having now after retiring from international football in 2020, which is 6 years ago. It's terrifying, but anyway.
Yeah,
I mean, it shows that his, I suppose, his decision to retire from international football has paid dividends. He's still playing, scoring goals at 38 in League One. Mm-hmm. But you're right, it's so like, what? Look, I'm wary of looking back. It's 10 years ago and going, what could we've had? We had some great days 10 years ago, Euro 2016. But we did have a player there who we saw throughout EFL, who is just one of the most technically gifted footballers you will ever see.
Yeah,
and we had him on the books for 3 or 4 years, and he wasn't getting capped.
Since 2014,
it's a shame. It's a great shame that he only got. Yeah,
and it's easy to look back with rose tinted goggles or whatever. And it is just football, exactly. Mm. But I can't get enough of David McGoldrick. And still, if you get the chance to watch him, if Barnsley are on the telly for whatever reason, just watch it. Just watch it. Even if he doesn't score, his touches, everything about him, just so silky.
Even the little, like the goal at the weekend was unbelievable, but he did a little, I'm going to flick it back, but I'm not. And he dragged it and he just bent it in the far corner. Yeah. Like
Arthur genius. Actually was saying as well, he had a goal disallowed prior to that and wasn't quite as like, you know, extravagant, but just like class.
Yeah.
Just class. So I wanted to get that in there. We've a couple of other things to finish up on. I did, as far as the EFL goes, I had put in a bit about Jack Moylan, and that went a bit left. Glad you'd be making up after the podcast here now when you're joking. But Aaron Cashin was another one I wanted to mention. New lease of life. Turns out the data can be right. You know,
there you go.
The data can be right.
I always back the data.
Yeah, you do. Data Dave over there. I want to mention Mexico very quickly. There's a lot of trouble going on in Mexico at the minute, of course, where Ireland will be hoping to kick off their campaign in Guadalajara. This, where this is happening, is not a whole lot too far away from Guadalajara. I've got a couple of quotes here from an article I was reading on Al Jazeera the other day. I'm going to read off you now.
Will I show you the, I seen Jared on this morning.
Yeah.
Helcom.
You're not on
Helcom to Mexico.
Yeah.
That's it there. Helcom to Mexico. I suppose it kind of says it all in the headline there, but go on, Ed.
Yeah. The fear remains. The fear that remains in society is overwhelming. A resident of Zitácuaro, Michoacán. Yeah. A place in Mexico, obviously. One of the states hit by the unrest, told Al Jazeera, requesting anonymity. That's when you realize the immense power these organizations have, because they can collapse a city in a matter of minutes. They've co-opted the leaders who manage transport, and at any moment they can block entrances and exits of a city. They can completely paralyze the city's movement. They added, all basic services are disrupted. Going to hospitals, grocery shopping, ordering food, it becomes total chaos.
Mm.
So that is obviously a resident of one of the areas where this trouble is going on. Obviously, this is off the back of the killing of Nemesio Rubén Oseguera Cervantes, the leader of Mexico's Jalisco New Generation cartel, also known as El Mencho.
Yeah.
So, David, what's happening here? Would there be any fear? Would this put you off going to Mexico for the World Cup?
I think this is one of the craziest kind of stories pre-World Cup that we've had about a World Cup host for like a long time. And also we've had like the complete shit show in America for the last couple of months.
I mean, the last couple of places we've had haven't been the picture of normality.
No, but like
Qatar and
but there was no.
This is just like seems like a Wild West.
Yeah, I suppose this guy Al Mencho, he is basically, he's kind of the guy that came after El Chapo, like El Chapo Guzman, who, so like the Sinaloa cartel, which we're all, I'd imagine we'd be fairly familiar with, was this huge cartel in Mexico. And a couple of years ago, he was removed as the kind of the linchpin of that. And when that happens, there's like a power vacuum. So El Mencho and the CJNG, the Cartel Jalisco de Nueva Generación, basically have kind of filled this kind of vacuum and are the biggest cartel in Mexico. And from what we've kind of been reading and researching over this last kind of couple of days is that the US are putting a lot of pressure on Mexico to kind of get these huge drug kingpins. And he was actually led to his death by a romantic lover. And the
shouldn't have a movie.
Yeah, and the Mexican authorities got wind of it. They asked the Mexican president, Claudia Sheinbaum, for authorization to carry out the operation. Also, the Americans were also involved as well in this operation to kill him. They got him. I think 70 people died with the violence that kind of happened after. But in places, so Guadalajara is basically the capital city of the state of Jalisco, which is one of the World Cup venues. It's like in the west of Mexico, and then there's places like Puerto Vallarta, which is like it'd be like the Wexford of kind of that generation. That's where a lot of people go on holidays. A lot of Americans have kind of moved there.
Sunny southeast of Mexico.
Yeah, but it's like a holiday destination, basically. Yeah, a lot of people kind of move there, get married, whatever.
Yeah, and it's not an isolated thing. I'm reading here the retaliation was instantaneous. As news of the operation spread, a coordinated wave of violence exploded through the country, reaching at least 20 of Mexico's 32 states.
Yeah, so like there's obviously been a security concerns in Mexico for years and years, but like to have this operation carried out now 4 months ahead of the World Cup is a bit crazy. Yeah. It's also because like when this happens, more and more violence happens because there's like this power vacuum and everyone's trying to like maneuver and kind of take over to be the next big cartel, I guess. Those games in Liga MX that were canceled, postponed, the Querétaro were supposed to play, which is about 350 kilometers in Mexico City. They're a pretty big side. There was a Clásico between Club America and Chivas in the women's Liga MX that was also canceled. The Acapulco Open, the tennis tournament, looks like it's going to go ahead. But yeah, there are serious travel concerns. I wouldn't be too concerned because we're still a long way away from it. And like my experience in Mexico is that it's pretty safe as long as you don't make like stupid decisions. Yeah. But as regards to World Cup, Ireland, if they do get there, will play their opening game there against South Korea on the 12th of June. South Korea and Colombia are two countries that will have their World Cup bases in Guadalajara. Or in that kind of area.
And around the gym.
Yeah, so it's...
definitely want to keep an eye on it. Yeah, and... Because it is going to develop.
Yeah, and it's an unfortunate kind of... It's an unfortunate kind of spotlight on Mexico, because Mexico is such a brilliant country, such a wonderful, interesting, diverse, incredibly interesting place to go.
Yeah.
So I definitely keep my wits about me, but it's, you know, this story, which is kind of blown up over the last couple of days, will definitely develop a lot more between now and June. And I think the only thing I can kind of compare it to that I can kind of remember is when before the 2018 World Cup and before the Olympics in 2016 in Rio, there was these kind of, let's say, military operations, police operations that went into like favelas and stuff in Rio to try and rid them of gang violence or of kind of gang control, and that kind of happened, but that was still a little bit off Broadway, whereas these kinds of incidents were happening quite close to like a Estadio Akron, which is a stadium where in Guadalajara where the World Cup games will take place. Spain and Uruguay also slated to play a game there as well.
Guadalajara, yeah. So another story as well, obviously we keep an eye on that one. There's been a few little developments on Ireland's clashes with Israel in the Nations League. We've got loads of stuff out there. We are running out of time here, and it doesn't seem quite right to just cut at the end of this, but there's loads of stuff across our platforms you can go and check out around that. A couple of League of Ireland managers come out and basically voiced their how would you put
concerns
it?
Concerns with the game going ahead and wanting to go ahead.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. So we might touch on that a little bit more next week.
We kind of got caught off ran for time last week. We didn't get a complete chance to develop into all of that. There will be a lot of opportunity, unfortunately.
Yes, of course. And it will develop. The games aren't for that long.
And we should add that we will be speaking to the FAI tomorrow about it.
Yeah.
So
of course. So that is all we have time for on this week's episode of Outside the Box. Please do get in touch with us. Our socials are at Off the Ball across all platforms. You want to get in touch with the three of us directly, at offtheball.football is our Instagram account. We're on WhatsApp at 0879 180 180, and David's in control of our email, outsidetheboxotb2026@gmail.com. David, have we received an email yet?
To be honest, I kind of stopped checking. So
you need to email so much that David's phone cannot handle it anymore, and he's forced to check.
Yeah, the email engagement will come, but it will just, there might be some developments that might help.